The following recording is brought to you by Seekers Hub Global. For more information about our courses, visit us online at seekershub.org.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. In the previous lesson, we saw that logicians use composite verbal expressions to carefully compose mental concepts. And we saw briefly that the concepts that they use to do this, the concepts that they compose with other concepts in order to form new concepts, are universal concepts. And this raised the question at the end of the last lesson, what are universals? And that is what we will study in this lesson. So Athiruddin al-Abhari, he says in his Isagoji, he says that basic expressions are either universal or singular. So he divides expressions. He says basic expressions. Remember, we're studying universals because we want to learn how to compose universal concepts in order to arrive at new knowledge. That's what logicians do. So we're interested in basic expressions. We're going to compose them with other basic expressions. And so he says that basic expressions are either universal, in Arabic this is called kulli, or they are singular. In Arabic this is called juz'i. Now, he divides here expressions into universals and singulars. And throughout this section, he refers to universals and singulars as expressions. That, however, is not quite accurate. If we return to our previous lesson, we saw the illustrative example, the man is standing. We saw that this was an expression. It's something that's said. The man is standing. It's a sound that we hear. And this is a composite expression that is composed of two sub-expressions, the man and standing. It's also composed of the expression is, but is a different kind of expression. It's called a copula. Its role is merely to link the subject and the predicate. We'll return to this later on. For now, we're just going to put it aside as unimportant. The two verbal expressions that are actually being composed are the man and standing. Now, each of these expressions, because they are meaningful, they signify a mental concept. And they signify, each of them signifies a mental representation. The verbal expression, the man, signifies the mental representation of something that is outside the mind. And the meaning, the expression standing, signifies the mental representation of something that is outside the mind. And these mental representations, they signify extra-mental reality. And so this is the relation between expressions, representations, and extra-mental objects. Now, we saw at the end of last lesson that the realm of language is the realm of verbal expressions. And the realm of logic is the realm of mental representations or mental concepts. And objects that are outside the mind are the realm of metaphysics. Although the author of our text, he is describing expressions as singular and universal, it's actually the concepts in the mind that are singular or universal. So as we read Athiruddin al-Abhari's description of singulars and universals, what we want to do is we want to replace expression in our mind with concept. So universal and singulars are, the logicians, they say, that expressions are only secondarily described as being singular or universal, meaning that if an expression signifies a universal concept, then we call it a universal expression. But the reason why we call it a universal expression is not because the expression is universal, but because the concept that it signifies is universal. So the description of an expression as a universal, it derives from the universality of the concept. So expressions are secondarily universal or singular, whereas concepts are primarily intrinsically, inherently singular or universal. So remember, keep in mind that we're talking about concepts. Now let's go through each one of these two concepts in turn. Let's look at universal concepts. And so he says an expression. Remember, in our mind, we're going to replace the word expression with concept. So an expression or a concept is universal, kulli, when its conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances. So conception. So first thing you want to note here is he says that what he actually means is a concept, because when you conceive of something, whether something is universal or singular depends on its conception. So an expression is universal when it's mere conception. We're talking about the concept. So let's take the concept of man. Now I have here a picture of a bubble, a thought bubble, and that's important because when I've written the word man, I'm not actually talking about the expression man, but I'm talking about the concept man. So you want to strip away the sounds and think about the mere concept. So the concept man is a concept whose conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances. What does that mean? Well, it means that you can take an individual instance, a particular thing, like the person Zayd, and say that he is a man. You can say Zayd is a man. So the universal concept man can be predicated to a particular individual instance, a particular thing, Zayd. It can also be predicated to a particular individual instance named Hamza. You can say Hamza is a man. It can also be predicated to a particular individual instance, John. You can say John is a man. It can also be predicated to particular instances, individual particular instances, besides these three particular instances, without end. So this is what it means for a concept to be universal when its conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances. So when I conceive the meaning of man, I find that I can predicate it to instance A, Zayd, instance B, Hamza, instance C, John, instance D, E, F, and so on without end. And so I find that the conception of this concept does not prevent its predication to multiple instances. And so this is a universal. So the concept man, we say, is a universal concept. Athiruddin al-Abhari, he gave a different example. He gave the example not of man, but a human. And he says that human is a universal concept because it can be predicated to multiple instances, like Zayd, Hamza, John, and so on. You can say Zayd is a human, Hamza is a human, John is a human, and so on. Now, you will notice that there's a word in the definition that we glossed over. He says an expression is a universal when its mere conception, not just its conception, but its mere conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances. This is an important qualification that we will return to later on. I want you to put in your mind that there's this additional qualification in the definition of the universal. We'll come back to it. Let's go and examine singular concepts. And the meaning of a universal concept will become even more clear when we look at the meaning of a singular concept. So he starts off by saying that an expression is singular. Now, remember, we said that the universal and the singular is the concept. And the expression is only called a universal expression when it signifies a universal concept. And it's only called a singular expression when it signifies a singular concept. And so in your mind, change expression to concept. So a concept is singular, or in Arabic, this is called juz'i. We say expression is singular when, he says, when its mere conception prevents its predication to many instances. So this is the opposite of universal. A concept is universal when its mere conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances, and it's singular when its mere conception does prevent its predication to many instances. Again, we have the word mere that we're going to gloss over. Keep it in your mind. We'll return to it later. Let's just keep the definition at the expression is singular when its conception, put mir aside, when its conception prevents its predication to many instances. Like what? He says, Athiruddin al-Abhari says, such as the proper noun expression Zayd. So now I want you to think of Zayd, which is the mental representation of the actual person who exists extramentally. So there's a particular person who has been given the proper name Zayd. And so this person, there is the Zayd that's outside the mind, the individual instance. There's the concept of Zayd in the mind. This is the mental representation of the extramentally existing thing. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the concept in the mind. This concept of Zayd is a singular concept. Why? He says, because its conception prevents its predication to many instances. So this the concept of the particular person Zayd can be predicated only to him. So you can say this is Zayd, but you can't say anything else is Zayd. You can only predicate it to a particular instance, Zayd himself. When you have a concept of this nature, this concept is called a singular concept. Another example, you can take another name, Hamza. Hamza is a singular concept. Why? Because it's the name of a particular person. And so when you bring the concept that represents that particular person to mind, you bring that concept to mind, its conception, you conceive of it and you understand from conceiving it that this is a singular concept and you can only predicate it to one instance, which is that person himself. So you can say this is Hamza, but you can't say anything else is Hamza. So this is a singular concept. Same with John. So concepts are either universal or they are singular. They are universal when their conception does not prevent predication to multiple concepts, like the concept man and the concept lion. You can say you can predicate the concept of lion to many individual lions, and it's the concept is singular when its conception does prevent its predication to multiple concepts. And these are concepts, mental representation of particular instances such as Zayd and such as John. Now, what about the concept of necessary being? The word necessary here is something that is studied in greater detail in the science of kalam, in the science of theology. And we'll return to this point of necessary being in our companion course to this course, the course on the Sanusiyah, inshaAllah ta'ala. But very briefly, just to illustrate the logical principle here, a necessary being is a being that exists necessarily. What it means for a necessary being to exist necessarily is that it is a being that is not given existence by anyone else, but it exists by virtue of what or who it is. We are not necessary beings. We are contingent beings. Contingent means that it's possible for us to exist, and it's possible for us to not exist. Anything that is such, that is contingent, it's possible for it to be, and it's possible for it not to be, it needs something outside of it, other than itself, to make it be. And then you ask about the thing that made it be, is it necessary or contingent? If it's contingent, then it needs something else to make it be. Now this cannot continue on ad infinitum, because otherwise it would not explain the existence of any contingent thing at all. It's like me saying that I have the proof of a theorem, and I say, what's the proof of this theorem? I pull out a theorem from my pocket, and then you ask me, what's the proof of this theorem? I pull out another theorem from a pocket. And you ask me, what's the proof of that? I pick out another one. And then I say, don't bother. Every time you ask me for the proof of a theorem, I'm going to pick some other one out. And it goes on ad infinitum. Immediately you'll say, well, no, unless there are certain axioms that don't need to be proven, then you haven't really proven anything. And similarly, until the chain of contingent causation ends in a necessary being that is not given its existence by something else, you haven't explained the existence of any contingent thing. So this is what a necessary being is. Now, what I just explained to you was a very, very quick summary of an argument for the existence of God that the scholars of Islamic theology, they call the argument from contingency, Dalilul Imkan. This is not something that we want to, that's not the focus of this course. I'm bringing it here for illustration. So what we want to focus on, something else. Okay, what do we want to focus on? I'm not done explaining yet, then I'll tell you what we want to focus on. Now, the scholars of Islamic theology, they have another proof based on this proof, and then this proof, it's based on the verse of the Quran that we've seen that were there any other gods in the heavens and earth apart from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then they would have been in ruin. Now, this proof can be worked out, and this proves that there can only be one necessary being. It's not possible for more than one necessary being to exist. So let's say that we've worked out that proof, and so what's the conclusion? The conclusion is that the universal concept of necessary being only applies to one instance. This is the point now. The universal concept of necessary being only applies to one instance. There can only be one necessary being. You can only say of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a necessary being. So is this a universal concept or is it not a universal concept? The answer is it is a universal concept. And so the objection is that, well, when you conceive of it, its conception, if you work out the consequences, the logical entailments of its conception, then you'll see that it can only be predicated of one instance. And so it cannot be a universal. So the conception of necessary being does not prevent its predication, it does prevent its predication to multiple concepts. Whereas the definition of a universal is that its conception does not prevent its predication to multiple concepts. And so what's going on here? And so this is why the logicians, they add a qualification and they say that an expression is a universal when its mere conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances. What they mean by mere conception is that you put the meaning, the specific meaning of necessary being, the specific meaning of, for example, man, the specific meaning of, for example, lion, aside. You put the specific meanings aside, the mind, when it merely conceives of this kind of concept, regardless of the meaning, it immediately perceives, non-inferentially it perceives, that I can take this concept and I can predicate it to multiple instances. Now, it might be that in actual fact, it can only be predicated of one instance, like necessary being. But that's a separate issue. It's a separate issue. It's a different issue from the fact that this thing, as a universal concept, it is a universal concept, and a universal concept, from the perspective of its being a universal concept, can be predicated of multiple things. It's only because of an external proof that we know that in actuality, it can only be predicated of one thing, one being, namely Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There are other concepts like this as well. Consider, for example, the concept of nothing. This is also a universal concept. Yet, we find that if we look at its meaning, we conceive of its meaning, we cannot predicate it to anything because nothing is nothing. So, how do we get around this? We say that even though its conception does not prevent predication to multiple concepts or multiple instances, its mere conception as a concept, if you put its particular meaning aside, does not prevent its predication to multiple concepts. This is another way of saying that the mind conceives that this is a universal concept. This is the summary, Abhari's summary. Let's read it again. He said, basic expressions are either universal or singular. An expression is universal when its mere conception does not prevent its predication to multiple instances, such as the expression human. And an expression is singular when its mere conception prevents its predication to many instances, such as the proper noun expression Zayd. So what are universals? This was the guiding question of this lesson, and the answer is universals are concepts whose mere conception does not prevent their predication to multiple instances. Now, this might be a interesting, categorization of concepts, that they're categorized into universal or singular. But what's the point? Why are we studying universal concepts? Why are universal concepts important? We need to understand that to put this lesson into context, and so we'll cover that in the next lesson. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم والله سبحانه وتعالى أعلم وهو حسبنا ونعم الوكيل.
Thank you for listening to this recording brought to you by Seekers Hub Global. Please remember to post any questions you have about this class on the Seekers Forum on your course page. Jazakumullahu khair.